From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on August 1st when the United Way of Greater Rochester and the Finger Lakes notified local nonprofits that some would be facing a significant reduction or a loss of United Way support. Almost immediately, local organizations were warning the public that they might have to cut services or programs. And privately, a growing group of nonprofit leaders told us they didn't feel like they had a lot of information that this was coming. Here's how my WXXI colleague Brian Sharp described it in his initial reporting. Quote, area nonprofits are facing potential service cuts due to the significant reduction or loss of United Way support. Food Link, Jewish Family Services of Rochester, and Baden Street Settlement are among those, confirming they were effectively defunded by United Way and will not receive any money after January 1st. Charles Settlement House and Community Place of Greater Rochester will see a reduction of roughly 90% in multi-year funding, officials said, end quote. Now, Brian Sharp quoted Jamie Saunders, president and CEO of the United Way of Greater Rochester and the Finger Lakes, who said, quote, this is a painful reality that we cannot commit dollars we simply do not have, and shines a light on this unfortunate shift that is a community problem and in which we need to come together because it's simply not sustainable, end quote. Saunders cited what has been a nationwide downturn in individual giving that really started during the pandemic. There is data to back that up. Charitable giving plunged in 2022, fell further in 2023. Saunders says she is committed to finding solutions and described this as a crisis moment for local nonprofits. Several weeks after the initial announcement, the local United Way announced that they are increasing bridge funding for nonprofits, essentially a lifeline that is designed to make the pain less acute. The United Way says this should be enough to provide 75% funding for affected agencies next year, 50% the year after. So what happens next? Is the downturn in charitable giving permanent? Let's talk about it with our guest this hour. Jamie Saunders is president and CEO of the United Way of Greater Rochester and the Finger Lakes. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Ron Thomas, executive director of Baden Street Settlement. Ron, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Also with us is Elaine Spall, executive director of the Center for Youth. Thank you
for being
here. And Anne-Marie Cook, president and CEO of Lifespan. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
I want to just start with a little bit of what has happened here. And, you know, Jamie, in terms of the process here, I'm sure August 1st comes, no one wants to make this kind of announcement. That's not anything that you want to do. You'd like to see this change. We'll talk this hour a lot about really the state of philanthropy and where this is going and what might that change that or whether it's semi-permanent in your eyes. But let me just start with the process here. These kind of painful cuts, did you feel like you were transparent enough with local nonprofits, that they knew this was coming, that they could handle this, or do you think it's legitimate for some to have felt a little blindsided?
Well, first, let me start with a love letter to our nonprofits. So they are a crucial part of the fabric of our region. They're vital. We're in their corner, and we will continue to fight for all the resources we possibly can to support them. What we're talking about here is a phase one of United Way. So we talk about cuts and reductions, but truly what happens is every 3 years, this time it was 4.5, there's an open RFP process of grants. There's a review process. There's a cabinet. There's a rubric. There's all those elements. What has happened traditionally is that our lovely network has looked very similar. And what we know that we've done in the past is multi-year grants, which is very, very rare in philanthropy to do multi-year grants. But we know that is important so they can plan. So you can have that social worker and know they'll be there year after year. So during the pandemic was the last 3-year cycle. We added a bonus a year and a half. So 4.5 years of saying on repeat, this will be different. During the pandemic, we lost 20% of our workplace partners. Our money at United Way, we raise it every year and we give it out every year. So during that dynamic time, we kept saying, yes, it's going to be different. Next cycle will be different. But I must say, and I've watched these incredible people around this table, their heads were down, putting out crisis, meeting community need at scale. So did we give enough warning? Sure, and absolutely not, because it's not enough, because there isn't enough resources and they're facing challenges. August 1st was our shift from our multi-year grants were 100% of our funding. Now it's just half. So we said that on repeat. We said that at town halls. Some said, yes, I plan. Some said, no, I didn't hear you. Some went for more. All of it's true. And I wish that we had more time. Our business is real time. So it happens. We raise it and give it. So we have to make quick answers. There's no perfect time. So I believe that no matter what, we would have felt like a blindside because there's no alternative. United Way funding is very unique. It's played a very significant role for a very, very long time. But I want to highlight it's phase one. Phase two are 1-year grants, and those have yet to come. During COVID, and actually the last 5 years, over $100 million came from United Way's donors to support our community. $100 million. Our average donor is $2 a week. There is something beautiful in that. And yet, it's not enough to sustain the incredible infrastructure of our nonprofits.
You told WXXI, Brian Sharp quoted you as saying, "We are dedicated to this community. We share in the pain of this moment. We get it." End quote. And so I want to ask you something that I know that you've heard in various forums, social media, elsewhere. Are you sharing that pain by cutting staff, making internal cuts at United Way? How are you sharing the pain?
We share the pain in terms of operating costs. Absolutely. We have not filled certain positions. We have held back on certain strategies. We have reduced some of the areas that we are had as part of our plan and our strategy. And yet, I appreciate the focus on United Way. I appreciate that in general, our community can rally when there is something to point at. Even the language of cuts and reductions, it's that feeling that we all have that is very real. But the real enemy here, the real challenge before us, is we have increasing complex needs, we have decreasing resources, and we have an opportunity as a community to address those. So we are very open book. We're certified charity this, charity that, all the badges, clean audits, all those elements. The United Way is turning 107. You have to continue to evolve to meet the needs of the day. And we are shifting from our about $10 to $12 million a year, just over half are multi-year commitments. And that's what we're feeling is this messy moment, this really painful moment. More grants are coming, more ways to help are coming, but it's very different.
The reason I ask about staffing is I think there's around 100 staff overall with your organization. Is that right?
It's a mixture. So we have about 30 that are host initiatives, like our Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative, our Together Now organization. That's about 30. We serve a six-county region, 5,000 square miles. But it truly is this small, mighty team of barely 70 that are supporting this at scale of what we are trying to accomplish, which is about $35 million in resources to the community every single year.
Part of what we're going to talk about this hour is if we are concerned that what has happened in philanthropy and charitable giving, if that is not likely to change, if that is not likely to dramatically get back to where we were 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And if it is not, if the reality that was announced August 1st is permanent or somewhat permanent, I think the signal to the community would be something odd if your own organization didn't cut. But it sounds like you say you are at least cutting some staff, is that right?
So I want us to think bigger here. So yes, we are incredibly prudent. I will tell you my staff are working 12, 14 hours a day. I will tell you we are on thin. Like, it is spread so thin and hardworking. They are committed individuals. We have not filled positions. We are not rightly staffed. If my board monitors it, we have auditors who monitor it. We hit every efficiency metric you can think of, and we are below the staff that we need to pull off what we do for this community. So I appreciate the spotlight being prudent on it. The bigger question is our strategy is to diversify revenue on behalf of the community. So you just heard me mention, so last year, $18 million in our campaign. Donors designate to organizations, and then they also pick our Community Impact Fund, which is what supports these amazing nonprofits. That's the grant making we get to support, and we have a team that's out in the field supporting them. But you also, I hope, heard we leverage an additional $15 to $20 million a year in other revenue, and that is where the growth area is. And you'll hear that from my colleagues. It is in public funding, which is federal and state. It's having us come together in different ways. So it's not one nonprofit, but it's five who come together to ask for bigger dollars at a national level. But the bigger question is, what is the actual need in our community? What do we need to meet that need? And then how will we resource it? So 21 years old, Jamie Saunders created a nonprofit. I got a pro bono attorney. I filed with the AG. I actually was going to address poverty because nobody was addressing poverty. This gentleman across from me, his organization has been here for over a century. I meant well, but you could create a nonprofit is hard to manage, but easy to start. We have a lot of incredibly hardworking, dedicated organizations. The rest of that story is Tom Ferraro, who ran Foodlink, called me and said, "Well-intended, but you're perpetuating the problem," and he eventually hired me. And so I say, how do we channel the good work of individuals, their desire to do great things, to lean in to support organizations, but really to be rational about how and where we are meeting the needs, building on the goodness that exists, not necessarily creating the new.
Do you think there are too many organizations?
I think that we have an opportunity now to look at how we are meeting community needs in a big, bold way. If you look 10 to 15 years into the future, we will have more retirees than workers for the first time in human history. That means public dollars, tax dollars, revenue will be lower. The government is the greatest provider and funder of human services. We also know the greatest wealth transfer is happening, and this next generation engages differently, not better or worse, but differently, and they also have more debt than the prior generations. That is a complex soup. And let alone all the changes in the workforce that we're experiencing of disconnection of community and what does that mean and how do you engage, the reduction of social capital and connection, all of that is a moment for us to say, what does human service look like in 2040 in this community? And I look at these amazing individuals because we've had these conversations in the human service field much longer than me, but decades and decades. I used to be at the Center for Governmental Research, and I just dusted off a report by Don Pryor in 1998 about human service organization and effectiveness. And we have had this conversation. The moment here is, how do we look at the needs, what the community wants from us, and then we have the structures, not just our beloved orgs because they've been our beloved orgs forever, but what does the actual community need from us, and then how do we meet that?
All right. I've got a couple more questions for Jamie, and we're going to talk to colleagues around the table in just a second. To make sure I understand fully that answer, it sounds to me, or maybe a listener would take that as, you know, President Saunders is trying to kind of prepare the community for the fact that we might need to right size, that we might need to. Is that part of what you're doing?
We are very engaged with our Council of Agency executives and others around the community of where can we be helpful in looking at and listening with open ears of what the community members are seeking. We've been doing a lot of this work already, so I do want to lift up a lot of work has been done through our MAPI, the Poverty Initiative, together now, many committees we sit on, and we keep hearing, bring services to community. We just supported that with Monroe County. They're in community now. Are there ways for us to have center navigation, community schools, neighborhood hubs, ways to connect to resources in a different way? We did it during the pandemic. We did it. We've done amazingly hard things. So I know it's possible. We are advocating and participating in conversations about how can we think about the settlement houses? How do we think about aging? How do we think about youth services? United Way doesn't do this alone. We cannot dictate it, nor would we. It's how can we facilitate those discussions over the long term? And taking this moment and the bridge funding that our board and others agree, that's from our Mackenzie Scott gift. So we've been waiting. Because during the pandemic, it was estimated that half of nonprofits would close their doors. There was studies about it. So we were bracing for half of nonprofits to close. They have not. We had that wonderful funding from the federal government. We had other resources. We had a compassion bump of giving. This day is now coming. Those ARPA funds are going to expire, those federal dollars. Philanthropy has not rebounded. This is that moment of how do we come together collectively to say, again, how can we meet the needs of our neighbors? One in three of our neighbors relies on human services in this community. One in three. So you are either working poor or living in poverty. There's a range that aren't in either of those categories that need support. Like my family receives support from Lifespan. We have to think bigger about what is the big landscape, how can we meet that need, and do it with heart. That's why this matters. We all care so passionately about this, but how do we take this moment to think about the future?
All right, a couple of the process questions. I want to ask about the evaluation process for funding. Mm-hmm. Here's how my colleague Brian Sharp reported it. Quote, also different this year, the local United Way used a blind evaluation process, removing the names of the nonprofits and programs from all 279 applications, officials said. The new award list will include 36 organizations that had not previously received United Way funding, officials said, end quote. So it sounds like a couple of things are happening, and correct me if I'm wrong here. The first is that you've kind of changed the way you're doing this. You're instead of saying, well, we recognize these relationships, we know Baden, we know Lifespan, we know whatever, we know Christ's Nursery. Instead of doing that and saying we can roughly gauge their value and what they need, you said we're not going to do that. We're going to do everything blind. And as a result, you want to try to evaluate fairly, blindly. I think that was the purpose. No? Okay. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, I know. I love it.
And then the second part of that, though, is it does sound like there are organizations that have been funded that are going to lose funding. And then there are some organizations that you have not funded in the past that are getting funding for the first time. Is that part correct?
Partially. And I'm so grateful to be on your show because you can't get it in sound bites and snippets and social media posts.
And
so I love this.
I'm sure that I'm getting some process wrong.
No, but I love it. So you're not the only one. So I appreciate it. So let me start with if you had $35 million in requests from organizations and you had $6 million to allocate, how would you do it? $35 million in requests, $6 million available, and you know and adore in all of these organizations that apply. So we modeled after United Way Worldwide. We are an independent United Way, but we modeled best practice, which is centering equity, and the first part to do that is to mitigate bias. The way you do that is you remove the names, and then you look for who's got conflicts. So that was step one. Then you do unveil, because you have to do your due diligence about the organizations and their budgets and the review. So it was blind in the first two steps. Then there is the holistic piece. And there are incredible organizations that did not receive multi-year funding simply because of the math, because it's $35 million to six. Crisis Nursery is beloved. We were one of the original founders. We did the research at United Way. We love that. It was $35 million in requests to $6 million. That's all that is. This isn't ranking if older adults are more important than youth or vice versa or in basic needs.
But is this process new this year?
It is. The double blind portion was, and all that did was a data point. So I will tell you, I actually was surprised. Some of our most beloved, I was like, that can't possibly be, scored not so high. And it's a cabinet of 30 members. They were trained. There's a rubric. We went through the whole process. And then it's, if this happens, does this happen? Where are the matching dollars?
So you're trying
what
to remove
impact?
Bias.
Correct. And then you look at it in totality because of the interconnections. But most of this comes down to just math. Again, $35 million to six. So you try to come up with your best way possible. I would not be able to do it. Just to be clear, I was not part of the review process because I can read them, and even without names, I'd know who all of them are. And that was part of it. There was spaces where that's true. But then the next 5 to 7 steps, we did know who they were. And I also want to correct, it isn't they're defunded or no money. It's this multi-year grant, which is the holy grail. It's the best money possible because you can plan 3, 4, 5 years into the future. You know you have it. There's other grants coming. Because philanthropy is now more episodic, we can't commit to the future. That's what we did in COVID. We announced our commitment in 2019, came out to do our campaign to ask the public in February and March, and we lost 20% of our funding right out of the gate. We kept everybody whole for 4.5 years by deploying all of the resources we had. We deployed savings from United Way. We dipped into our endowment. We took a loan. If you look at our 990, it shows a negative because we took a loan to keep all of these agencies whole. So we talk about sacrifice. We worked so hard. I'm grateful for my board and my staff. We worked as hard as possible to keep everybody whole through 4.5 years. Now here we are and said, we can't keep that business model. Half of it will be multi-year. The other half needs flexibility. The other element, we have been asking through meeting with our nonprofits and surveying, what else do you need from us? How else can United Way be helpful? And we heard through these surveys, different funding is what they needed. That's funding for infrastructure. That's funding for staff training. That's funding for their data systems. That's funding for initiatives that are on their hopes and dreams list. We heard from our other partners in philanthropy, if United Way chips in X, we'll chip in Y, and it'll be triple what you've got. So we're hoping to take the money we have, increase our impact, and increase and inspire additional revenue and resources to help more. Most of the conversation, understandably, has been on phase one, and that's this messy part where we've counted on United Way the same way for so long. My entire career has been at United Way funded agencies, so I get it. What I didn't get was that United Way had to raise it every year and was promising money into a future that it actually didn't have. So this is part of responsible management, responsible partnership, and responsible planning. United Ways that are growing across the country did this 5, 10, and 20 years ago. We have not. And this is part of our evolution that I promise you there's more services, more resources. They're just different. But United Way is turning 107, and there's more to come from us. And this is part of our recalibration for growth.
All right. You mentioned donor designations.
Yeah.
This office is an example that you get forms, and often the forms, so I'm going to try to summarize. You know, do you want to give to the United Way? And on that form, you can designate individual organizations for dollars to support. If we do that, is that donation going to the organization we're designating? Can you explain?
So yes, and we actually changed our policy even more. So we would have, when you designate to an organization, that's part of donor services. United Way's model is we are engaging with 600 workplace partners and we're advocating on behalf of nonprofits. There are over 800 on that donor designation list, and we hope there's more. Rock the Day is coming up, so we hope there's even more. Our job is to inspire collective giving. So donor designation is a service because for many, that payroll deduction, that is the way that they can over time give a very large gift of impact. So they do a little bit each time. We can't have, and you asked the question, 850 human service organizations each knocking on the doors of these companies. That's our job. So we do that on behalf of the sector. Donor designations, when you designate, goes to the organization or their United Way grant that is coming under the Community Impact Fund. That is prior practice. That is prior practice. We did make a change to say future forward, a little bit of caveat with our bridge funding, but future forward, when we get through this messy middle, all donor designations are on top of any grants from United Way. So it's all of these things have complexity. Short answer is, yes, your donor dollars, when you designate, help the organization you want to help. And it will continue to do that. And we want to continue to inspire in collective giving.
It sounds to me like it will in the future. It sounds like what you're saying is in the past, it could go to that organization, but it could also go to the Community Impact Fund, which is a general fund.
Let me be real clear. Always donor intent rules. So if a donor loves Lifespan, the donor dollars go to Lifespan's grant that is from United Way. It is now on top of, once we get through the bridge, it'll be on top of as a donor service. United Way has to fill up the bucket to be able to give out the resources. I wish I had as more research, triple the dollars to fund all these organizations at a bigger scale. But I will tell you, where the donor wants to give, that organization benefits from it. We have flawless audits, scrupulous oversight. It goes exactly where the donor wants for it to be, for that support. What is now different is it's on top. Very few organizations are above the grants that United Way would give. Our largest donor designation recipient, any guesses? Lollipop Farm, right? So this is all part of it. Same on Rock the Day. We actually have a loss on Rock the Day. We host that on behalf of the community, raise $1 million in 24 hours. That's coming up. That's part of inspiring collective giving. It goes where the donor wishes it to go.
All right. Lastly, before I turn to your colleagues here, you mentioned Mackenzie Scott. It was December 15th, 2020 that you made the announcement that Mackenzie Scott gave the United Way of Greater Rochester and the Finger Lakes $20 million. Mm-hmm. How much of that is left? How has that been spent?
Well, it's the bridge. So we've just committed and allocated it. We did also equity grants right out of the gate in partnership with our friends at the Health Foundation. We've invested it in crisis response work. So we did that for our newcomers, our asylum seekers who came, for example, that came out of that pot, to the flood victims that occurred in the city of Canandaigua. So those dollars are put to use. When we receive that incredible gift, we as a board and as an organization said, let us figure out how we can maximize these resources on behalf of the community. There are other recipients locally. It's amazing. There's about five, I think, now who've received these incredible grants. The pressure, of course, on our institution is people believe it has to all go out right away. It is a one shot. So how do we make the most out of this one shot? So in that initial, we carved out, it's true, I think in columns, for those of you who know me. So the first column was human service transformation. Then $500 million came from the federal government. So that 20 didn't look so useful. So we've been waiting on that piece of it of what is the best use of those dollars to help us, because we can see in the future the infrastructure can't be supported the way it historically has been, not just by United Way, but by all the factors that we talked about. So we have deployed those as part of, that is the bridge. That is how we're able to support this opportunity. I will say, you know, some of the other questions, well, why didn't you announce it ahead of time? There was questions of, do we need to? Because, again, we've been saying changes are coming. There is obviously a great need, and here is where we are able to step in and lean, and it's the right thing to do.
All right, let me ask our guests here. We're talking about what's going on with local philanthropy, and it's I don't think anybody would deny that we're in a crisis moment for local nonprofits, philanthropy. You heard Jamie Saunders describe, as the president and CEO of the United Way of Greater Rochester and the Finger Lakes, some of the changes that are being made here to put, in her words, the United Way in line with United Ways across the country, doing things in a way that are meant to grow and stabilize and deal with a more challenging reality. Ron Thomas, Executive Director of Baden Street Settlement. What's the situation with funding through United Way for your organization, Ron?
Well, for us, the United Way's funding has always provided a base from which we could then reach out to extend the need for additional resources. So in our Emergency and Family Assistance Department, which is really one of the most critical departments in the agency, the United Way funding allowed us to augment that funding by reaching out and soliciting grants for rental assistance, grants for other types of housing support, as well as to allow us to work with organizations like Food Link to extend the amount of food in which we could distribute within the community. So that infrastructure of the United Way funding is what allowed us to expand and go beyond and have the staff and the infrastructure to be able to reach out in a much, much more broad arena.
What changed this time around?
Our funding from the United Way would have taken away that infrastructure. And so we are thankful that in the future, at least we have 2 years in which to figure out how do we replace that infrastructure.
So this bridge funding, is that what we're
talking? Bridge funding is what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
On August 1st, did you know that these changes in funding were coming?
We knew that there would be a reduction in funding. Just in the nature of philanthropy in the community.
Yep.
So we knew that there would be a reduction. However, it was a surprise to us that the infrastructure that we had worked in concert with the United Way for many, many years to put in place, we were surprised that infrastructure went away.
Okay, what happens next?
I think what happens next is exactly what we're doing right now. I think everybody has retooled. We're sitting at the table. We're talking about how do we now go forward. And so I'm not sure that the future has been really defined. And I think that's what the conversations are about right now, is to try to determine what the future will be.
Anne-Marie Cook, President CEO of Lifespan, have you been affected here?
Yes. I mean, we saw a dramatic decrease in our United Way funding, and very similar to Baden Street, for us, it provided match to other federal dollars. So in aging services, you need 25% match to bring down the government funding. So when you lose that United Way funding, you also lose a portion of your government funding. We're grateful for the transition funding, because that will still allow us to bring down some of this government funding we need. And again, it's very similar to what Ron said. We have 2 years, I think, to redesign services to ensure that we can provide support to all people in need. You know, of course, Lifespan serves older adults, but we're committed to doing that. I've talked to Jamie about it, and we're going to have to do things differently in the future. There's no doubt about it.
Did you feel like everybody kind of knew this was coming, or were you surprised?
I was surprised. I mean, certainly we knew that, and Jamie was very clear, there was less money to distribute. I did not think that we were going to get the cut that we got. So I was surprised. I was shocked. But we all have to regroup right now with the United Way, with other funders here, and figure out how are we going to support people in this community in the future.
Elaine Spall, Executive Director of the Center for Youth. Can you describe what's been going on in terms of funding for your organization?
Yeah, and I want to thank Jamie for, you know, really being open to meeting with us. I wish it had happened before. I'm just going to be honest with you. I think the conversations that we have had with Jamie as our colleague and our ally should have happened in February. The misinformation, I will call it that come and ask us what you need, what you want, was not the right message. So we at the Center for Youth, they get $600,000, and we love it. And we've never gotten 601, by the way. So any designations that I know you probably designate to me, Evan, I'm just teasing, but if you do, it does help the United Way pay me, but it's not extra. And I represented the United Way for years when I was practicing.
Do me a favor. Yes. Set this aside. I want to come back to this. I just want to understand where you are with your funding now.
Yeah. Okay. So right now, our bridge, so we were at 600 and then we were at 150. The bridge funding will come back. The bridge funding will be not 600, it'll be 515, 75% of 515, because we have to take out of the United Way allocation in 2024, the portion that is non-United Way funded, and we don't have to talk about who it is, but there is a portion that came to us from another source. That's not coming back. So my new 2025 number is 385. It's not 450. It's not 600. It's 385. So I have to now think about what I'm going to do with that. The year after, it'll be about 260. So it's very important, and I don't know if all other organizations, Ronnie, I'm gonna maybe help you with this. You have to go back and look at really what is the United Way portion. It's not that you're not being transparent, but that is not what people are hearing. They're hearing 75% of 2024. That's not the number.
It's lower.
It's for me, it's not 450, it's 385. So I have to know that. I think that the biggest problem for me is that we could have together dealt with this and solved this differently. And I'm saying that my husband's like, you know, I like to be a hyperbolist. I like to look backwards. I do like to solve things in my mind. I have thought over and over again, how could I have helped? I mean, I actually, Damon and I were trying to, I think I reached out in February to get together, didn't happen. But I think that we could have made a difference front end. And I also think for me, and I'll be just very honest about this, when a family has a crisis, because United Way is our family, you got to sit down with the kids and you got to say, hey, guess what? We're not going to Disneyland this year. You got to come to me with basic needs and basic, and for this community, it's Baden Street. It's the crisis nursery, it's Food Link, and it is Lifespan. And that's what I wish we could have done. I wish there could have been a way for us, for those people. And for me, I will, you know, I'll find the money. I'm not going to close a crisis nursery. I didn't get any dollars coming in yet. I'm still looking. I think I'll get some. But it is a big difference. And Anne-Marie's point is very clear. There are federal grants, HHS, HUD, that we cannot make a commitment now for, because we don't have the funding that leverages that. That's very significant.
Can I work through these in a couple points here? And I'll, Jamie, I'm sure, wants to weigh in too as we talk through this. But number one, in your view, this was not communicated well. Is that fair?
I think that change is coming is like a theme.
It's too amorphous.
Versus you should come to us with 50% of what you had before. You should come to us. Help us solve this problem, allies, partners, friends.
Okay.
Sit with us.
Let's just put a pin in that. Jamie, you got three organizations at the table who said they kind of knew change was coming and they were shocked at the level of it. Was that a mistake in communication?
We always could do better.
I can't hear.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Thank you. Sorry. We always could do better. So, you know, I can do is apologize and apologize, and we will continue to do better. We're balancing a lot, right? So we're balancing a lot. I need to say that we're balancing those who have been under the United Way tent, those who have felt excluded, who haven't been under the United Way tent. We do not have the grantees here who are over the moon to finally be able to do and show and partner in big ways with us. So I appreciate these amazing colleagues. There are some wins. It's just not the group that feels it here. And when we think about communication, a lot of what I get pushback is, well, of course, Elaine's going to get it because Jamie loves Center for Youth and loves, you know, Anne-Marie's services actually help my family. So there's a whole host of bias and perception. So we have to balance that, but we are family. So how do we balance? There's 193 organizations that United Way supported through its network. We had 6 months of 18 town halls. I offered to go to every board meeting possible. There was a firewall between me and the 30-member cabinet, then to our board, because of how important this was and how hard this was. $35 million to six is hard. Just as Anne-Marie said, every member of the 193 who had relied on United Way funding said, oh, this is going to be hard. We know there's reduction, but it's not going to be me. We all felt that. This is just that messy moment. And so the question, I appreciate Ron's perspective, is how do we go future forward? We are in real-time business. So while meaning that we committed as soon as I knew the number of our campaign in June, and then we had July is when the recommendations made. I had 2 weeks to figure out. I had 2 days. 2 days between certain elements. There isn't a lot of time to be able to communicate the way that Elaine is asking. And there's still a lot of feedback of who's at the table and who is not at the table. And we balance that, too, because of the community. But I also want to just put in the room the importance of the donor. these are not our dollars. This is not United Way's dollars. If there are more resources and more people contributing and more people recognizing and listening to the pain of my colleagues, it is Hunger Games. It feels that way, and it's so unfortunate that nonprofits are competing against each other, that we as a system, as philanthropists, as donors, they are scrappy and hardworking and trying to do amazing work to help individuals. Our system is not set up to help in a way that can focus and really have this targeted effect. I do want to say the donor makes a difference here. The absolute donor makes a difference, and you feel like this is so large. Again, our United Way is $2 a week, our average donor. That comes together to make really big things happen. And what I don't want to have happen is this belief that United Way is not helping at scale, because we are, that United Way, we will come to the other side of this and truly galvanize different resources to support. And we are operating differently. So we announced that first $6 million. I only gave out what we have. Plus another million in additional revenue is going to our partnership with our community foundation and our GRASA partnership. This is new for us. We are pooling our resources in an attempt to make it easier for applications. We, as in the philanthropic world, are trying to do better and different as well. And we know that there's more opportunities, but to fill in the gap, your hearing is significant because it is significant. United Way can't solve all of that. It never could. Elaine is mentioning that the bridge funding is less because during COVID, we sought out actively other funds to fill in to make sure these organizations were whole during the hardest season that possibly could be. And now, I must say, we pledged $27 million over the next 3 years, and everybody's upset. And I just wonder, it's just a signal of the pain because it's not enough. So how do we get to a place where here is the pain, we recognize the pain, and how do we go to the future? And how do we have others feel a part of that and to see that it is possible to make a difference? That's the big question for me. I can't mitigate the pain. I can't go backwards. I met with 10 boards. I've offered to meet with anybody who wants to meet. I'm having many a coffee. It's really about the complexity. Even when you're asking the questions, there's multiple layers to a response because this is not simple work.
Sure, and we're going to talk philanthropy in just a moment. Elaine, you seem to be disputing this idea that designated donor dollars are going to get to you.
Well, they're not going to get to me till 2027.
I don't understand the allegation you made.
Okay, so here's what happened. And listen, I represented the United Way when I was practicing law, and I tried very hard to explain to people, you got to give to both places. I said, don't stop giving to United Way. But my board members at the center, for example, will say to me, you know, when we have our annual campaign, well, I just gave $1,000 to the United Way for the center. It's hard for me to actually say to them, but you have to say to them, thank you. That goes against the $600,000 that I get. They're like, what? What? And I said, yeah. So it does help all of us. It helps United Way meet their obligation, but it has always been a misnomer.
Let me try.
So we just would then lower the grants by $2 million. So I appreciate. I just want to make sure.
I just want to make it clear for donors.
I'm going to do my best to create a scenario.
Yeah.
That describes it, and this is where our guests are going to tell me if this is wrong or right. I've got two kids. I don't think it's a distraction, Jamie, because people want to know that their money is getting to where it's designated.
It is 100% going to where they're designating it. I can tell you assuredly it is 100% going where the donor asks.
If I'm giving each kid in a household, three kids, $20 a month, and then a neighbor says, you know, that your son's doing great yard work for me. Here's an extra $5 for him. And I say, great, thank you. And I keep the $5 for myself and I deduct it from the expenses to pay the $20. That $5's not actually going directly to him. That's going to my operational expenses.
Well, in defense of Jamie,
am giving $5 on top, yeah. Now he's getting $25.
Yeah, but in defense of Jamie, you know, and again, I'm a United Way person for 40 years. I'm so old, I've been 50 years maybe. It's not that she's keeping it. It's that she needed it to meet the community impact. So the donor designation does end up helping all of us meet the obligation that United Way has offered to us. What I want to make sure you understand is that it's not above what's already there. I would say it's maybe less than 1% of people who have an agreement with United Way who are above that. I mean, I represent the United Way. I think it's zero. I mean, so that's okay. But they need that community impact money to make their goal for us.
Okay. So I think we're getting too confused here. And I don't.
And it's not.
I don't want to be distracted.
It's not a distraction.
I'm just trying to understand how this. Oh, it does matter.
It does matter because people have to still keep giving to United Way and to the Center for Youth and to Baden Street. Don't stop giving to United Way just because you want to. That's what I worry about.
But if I knew United Way gives lifespan, just pick a number, $500,000. I'm like, great, but I love what they did for my family, so I want to kick in $10,000 on my own, and I want to know that that goes above and beyond. Now that that number that they're receiving is $510,000. If it wasn't $510,000, then that's not an actual donation to them. That's what I'm saying. You're shaking your head, so help me understand that.
Yeah, I worry that we focus on the wrong things. And I just want the main message is the donor intent always rules. And I, in this seat, it took me a bit because we had to get through the next grant cycle. But going forward, donor designation is on top of, and it always will be. That means that the grants that I can commit in multi-year will be smaller. That's the choice. That's the trade-off. So that goes back to, I only have what we raise. So that's the point, is that the more we have, the more we can give. So donor designation, donor intent always rules. So we track it meticulously that anybody that is designating, it goes to where they intend it to go. And I stand by that fully. Future forward, it will be on top of any grants. That means my multi-year grants are smaller because we are providing this donor service. So that's the main message. The ins and outs and the accounting and all of that is a distraction from the bigger story, which is we need donors to give. We need people to have confidence in these incredible organizations. There is more need than there are resources. The trends are not going in the direction that we all want. So how do we come together as a community and not go for hunger games and attack each other and try to distract from the bigger picture, which is we are here to serve when people need support and help. That's what we're all around the table for. That's where the passion comes from. And I adore Elaine, and she's an attorney, so she and I will argue, and she's very skilled at it. But when Elaine is speaking with passion, she is thinking about those babies. She is thinking about the youth at her shelter. I absolutely know she is. I hope you know I am too. And that is why we're all around this table. So how do we solve for this collectively? I've been telling my staff that, again, it's been a really hard season because they're in this work as their heart. And we are not receiving a lot of love right this minute. And yet the heart is, and why we show up for this work is for, again, this amazing service for this amazing community that we love. We are a very small portion of big need. How do we galvanize that and do it from a place of care, of empathy, of love and strength? And there's more coming.
Well, let me read about the state of philanthropy here. For the second year in a row, the Philanthropy Research Foundation GivingUSA reported fewer Americans are donating to nonprofits than they used to. The total amount of giving is declining once inflation is taken into account. And fewer than half of American households now give cash to charity. The money that is being given is increasingly coming from a small number of super wealthy people. And, you know, I was thinking about not just your place at the table as the leader of a local organization, Anne Marie Cook, as the president and CEO of Lifespan, but also some of the research that is involved with why people give, what makes people feel connected to a community, what makes someone feel inspired to write a check, or no one writes checks anymore, whatever, Venmo some, I don't know what people do, give money. We are supposed to be more connected, and yet you see isolation, you know, with what you do with Lifespan, you see isolation at all levels of society. What is going on here?
Well, I think part of it's inflation. So I think part of this dip is that people are really hurting personally. Certainly for the older adults that we serve, kind of for the first time ever, Rochester is a huge poverty problem, older adult poverty problem we rarely talk about. We have the second highest older adult poverty problem in the state. And a lot of our funds, as you can imagine, used to come, checks, it was checks, Evan, from people we served in this community, and they just can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
They're struggling to do that. And I do think, you know, the mentality of this community, I, like Elaine, have been around forever. It really was the jingle of, we take care of our own. You know, if you remember from the old United Way days, in which everyone would put in their $2, everybody put in their $2 to help. And people don't have $2 anymore. So I think we have to look at a huge need in our community. And I do think younger people give differently. Certainly my adult children give differently. They hop on Venmo, like you said, if they're worried about cats and dogs, and send it to the Lollipop Farm. So we don't have this community mentality anymore. We're very focused. And I think as a result, we have to do a better job communicating needs. And I don't think we do that here. And we also have to do a better job of communicating successes of the nonprofit community. And I think we do a horrible job at that, because there's a lot of successes out there. There are a lot of ways in which when people give, we can impact people's lives. And we have to do a better job at communicating that.
Ron Thomas is the executive director of Baden Street Settlement. How concerned are you about these trends in philanthropy, and what do you think can be done?
Well, I think that the lost opportunity was, I think the United Way had taken a position in this community to help with visibility. The RMAPI initiative, the systems integration issue, I think that people were was expecting that the United Way would present a framework in which people could give to know that their dollars were having maximum impact. And I think that that did not happen.
How? Why?
Well, I believe that the double blind, for example, I think that if there were metrics and parameters in which the definition of what would have the greatest impact and how that giving could impact this community, if that was defined and articulated by the United Way early on before it had made their decisions, then I think people could have understood why the decisions that were made. But to have a group of people who may or may not understand the infrastructure and systems that exist to address the very serious issues around poverty, around housing, around issues that impact our social determinants of health, if people would have had some idea of how those parameters were defined and identified and prioritized, then the confusion that went away with giving, some of that confusion would have gone away.
I don't want to speak for the United Way, but surely you think they took that into account, though, right? I mean, like, they're trying to create a system that is, in Jamie's words, free of bias, the fairest they can possibly be with a limited amount.
But you can't address those issues free of bias. I don't know how you address the issue of poverty without having some bias. You have to be committed to addressing the issue of poverty, and you have to prioritize that issue over other issues that the community are facing. So how do you prioritize? Which issue is most critical in terms of impact upon this community and the impact of citizens in this community? And I don't know how you do that without bias.
Do you understand why your funding was changed, was cut? Do you feel like you understand?
No, I don't feel that I understand why my funding was cut, because other people who provide similar services that do not have the same history and infrastructure that Baden Street has were funded. So it would be different if my funding sources were eliminated, but to fund someone else who does the same thing that I do without the infrastructure to do it, that's a different issue.
Ron, I hear you, and we're down the last couple minutes. Let me just give Jamie Saunders some time to respond to some of that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would say that the review process was for phase one, which is multi-year grants. There are more grant opportunities coming. The multi-year grants were focused on measurable outcomes and impact. That is intentional because the donors have changed and their expectations have changed. So we're able to show, because of this effort, this infusion of services, this life was changed in this way. That is very, very hard to do with some of the wonderful work and services from other partners, and therefore we are looking at other ways to support that. Because some of this, the most basic needs, that's all it needs to be, is just those basic needs. So we are in the phase one. Phase two is coming. There's different opportunities on the horizon, but I wanted to loop back to the giving. because it's very important. And we all just experienced locally some incredible, breathtaking philanthropy from Tom Golisano. We're all talking of that $360 million. That is personal choice, personal, when we watch it, it's beautiful. Philanthropy, by its definition, is the love of humanity. And I think we all witness that. Those mega gifts are happening. So if you look across the country, giving is up but not keeping up with inflation. But what's masking it is the everyday donor is down, like you shared. And that's the big question, because when you have these mega gifts, it's for their passion work. It doesn't necessarily take into consideration all of the network and all of the pieces that Ron just said, because that's their individual giving.
Do you think the
giving.
Mega gifts drive down the smaller gifts?
I think that those who received are, so please, whoever got Golisano, and you know the list, keep giving to them. 5 million, 3 million, 2 million, XXI.
Yeah.
They still need your money. It's a beautiful mouth-dropping thing, but it is also not enough for sustainability for all these incredible services. Mm-hmm. So please continue to give to all those places. What I would say is there was a small list. Only 8 of United Way partners were funded out of that list of $360 million. That $360 million is over 5 years, which is also extraordinary. Again, it takes your breath away. But we have to be true that, again, the donors in this community supported $100 million in the last 5 years for our local nonprofits. It's absolutely extraordinary. We can do big, powerful things, and I believe in this community. So I am a practical optimist, right? I'm very practical, and yet I believe our bright days are ahead of us. I believe that this has sparked conversations that we were not having that we need to have, that we can be proactive to design a human service system that will meet the needs in a profound way with new partnerships. New people are at the table. And I hope that the takeaway is, whoever is listening, we need you. And there's different ways to lean in.
How can they do that?
Because
you're going to hear the music. So how can people support?
So please give to all of these. Give to the nonprofits, please, 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 directly. And also at your United Way. Rock the Day is 24 hours of giving coming up on December 3rd. United Way doesn't keep that. It all goes direct. Volunteer United is available for you as well. And also vote. Please vote. You can register to vote till October 26th. But it's important to be civically engaged. That's how we build the community of the future.
I just want to say, as someone who's thinking a lot about the way people are connected, I do think a lot about lifespan and the work Anne-Marie Cook and people do. I know the work that Ron and the team do, that Elaine and her team do. There are so many organizations that do extraordinary work. Online, can give online for United Way?
Always, where? Yes. And you can designate. So United Way Rock, R-O-C-F-L-X. United Way Rock, F-L-X.
Rock, F-L-X. We'll put that in our show notes if you want a handy link for that. Jamie Saunders, President and CEO, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
Elaine Spall, Ron Thomas, Anne-Marie Cook from Center for Youth, Baden Street Settlement, CEO of Lifespan. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
Thank you, Evan.
More connections coming up.